Welcome to the completely unnecessary pre-Thanksgiving podcast.
Gobble, gobble.
For Tuesday, it's 11-22-22. That's weird. That's Ian Ferguson.
I like it when dates do things like that.
Ian at an undisclosed location with his Detroit Pistons blanket.
Is that it's a towel that I got for Spike. Okay. And it just got washed. I wrap his heat pad in it. He's a big Pistons fan, Spike. In fact, a little Spike cam here. Guy.
Hey, Spike. Hey, buddy. Spike's co-hosting, and I'm Pat Contry on the show today. Spike lay like a slug. It was his only defense. On the show today, we'll be talking about a certain oof video that has made the rounds, so to speak.
Oof, indeed.
A new NWC cart discovered, new in air quotes, because nothing's new for an NWC cart. And a question and answer and a Q&A. Ian's back. Did you listen to any of the Alex fill-in from last week?
I did not. I have not done. No. That past week, it was very busy, very rough. And I just, I got home from Tijuana and was immediately sick. So no, I didn't listen to any podcasts, but I'm sure Alex, was great, in my spot, probably even better in a lot of regards. I do channel a little bit of Alex from time to time with my beard, my long hair.
I was going to say, maybe it looks personality, yeah. But, people got a kick out of the should Nintendo make a new NES and carts.
I've had that conversation with Alex. It's a fun conversation.
I called him on Monday and was like, hey, we need a Q&A. We do a Patreon poll. We need a choice. And he immediately said that. I was just like, yep, that's gonna win. And I even said at the time, that's gonna win like 70% at least, and it was like 70-30 split.
You can record an entire podcast just on that
question. I had to cut us off. We were at like 22 minutes, so we got to move on. This is what
happens when you don't have a captain, a ship captain.
Captain Intro. I had to be Captain Intro for that. What was I going to say? Did you play Atari 50?
I did. And actually, that's what I was going to say, and I trailed off because...
Well, Spike's more important.
I'm on a lot of cold meds. Yeah, I played Atari. That's actually what I did while I was sick all last week, is I played Atari 50. It's a fantastic collection. I can't say anything that hasn't already been said. I found myself enjoying games that I never would have played on any other collection because of how interesting it was to see all this stuff in context. It's the first time I've given a shit about, you know, Atari sports games on a collection. And you know, because it made it interesting. I think all of the original titles are pretty fun. I don't love the Haunted Houses one, but I think the Breakout is fantastic, Vector Sector is fantastic, and the remastered version of Yar's Revenge is awesome, and Quadra Tank seems like it would be a lot of fun, but I would want to play that with multiple people.
I couldn't get a hand of the controls too easily because it's like a tank with like dual controls left and right.
It's actual tank control.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, but yeah, it's tough.
Tough to learn, but I'm sure it's fine. Neo Breakout was incredible.
Neo Breakout is great. I'm still playing through that. And Vector Sector, I love, love, love.
I think I got the Vector Sector.
Vector Sector is great. It combines basically Asteroids, Lunar Lander.
Oh, I did play that one. Oh, I like that one a lot.
Yeah, that one's fucking great.
Playing that, I was wishing for just an Asteroids one by itself. That would have been cool, but it kind of combined both, which was nice.
Plus, that combines four games.
Plus, I'm sure they don't want to cannibalize their Recharge games that just hasn't come out that too long ago.
Right, exactly. Yeah. They those are, you know, they mentioned those in one of the timelines, and obviously there's still sales to be made there. I still want to play the new Yar's Revenge one really bad. But yeah, no, it's a fantastic collection. I just wish there was some color blindness options, because some of those games can be pretty freaking rough.
Yeah, like I said, it's not, I mean, there's obviously, I wanted more things, and I wanted like Space Duel. I wanted the stuff. I wanted to be able to play almost every game I saw that there's no way to play them. But obviously, yeah, there's a cutoff at some point. You can't do that or everything. But the fact that they even put in Touch Me. This the same individual that did the Neo Breakout did the Touch Me, and I said that's great that they included that. When I looked at Touch Me, I was like, are they going to have a playable version? It would probably be semi simple to do that. I was like, there it is. Like, yep. Thank you for putting it in. I played it for like 10 minutes.
I've been looking on eBay for one that's in good shape now because my grandfather on my mom's side growing up always kept a Touch Me near him. I mean, honestly, for most of my childhood, just one of those things to like keep his brain sharp. He would always turn it on and screw around with it. So yeah, I like seeing the Touch Me. Having Tempest 2000 is amazing. It's great. I actually think Cybermorph is kind of fun. I would play Cybermorph when it would come in at Luna. And it even, like, I think contextually and just, you know, understanding, like having them, you know, talked about it, it made me enjoy some games more than I ever did. Mm-hmm. I've been playing a lot of 2600 Centipede. I love it now.
Really?
I've always hated 2600 Centipede, but I don't know, just something about it and listening to people talk about it. And it's like, yeah, we're doing an abridged version. You know, we just got to go for the feel and stuff like that. And it's tough for me sometimes to, you know, let go of the fact that certain arcade games are ports and can only be done so well.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, as its own thing on its own, sure, Centipede on the 2600 is fun. And a lot of their
yeah, Asteroids was
ended
pretty
up
good.
Being pretty good. Yeah, I don't love the 2600 Asteroids, but like the 7800 Asteroids, I've been playing that and I really like that one. So,
well, I mean, for having one button, Asteroids converted pretty well in 2600.
Oh, it did. It did. Yeah.
And so did Centipede, obviously. Missile Command was pretty good in 2600. I remember. I haven't played it recently, but I remember being pretty good. Back then, it would have been amazing. We've been like,
and I love 5200 Missile Command. Again, one of the few games that actually made decent use of that joystick.
Sure. Like I said, it's not perfect, but it's like as they retweeted me, Digital Clips, or they quoted me my quote, which is nuts that they did it. But thanks.
Well, it can never be perfect because of licensing and things like that. Like, I mean, everyone, of course, wants more. The question is, are you happy with what you got? And the answer is yes, 100% happy with what I got. It's fucking great.
So my Digital Clips approved quote was, this is an incredible achievement, and I'm not saying that with any sarcasm. This is arguably the best retro game compilation that's ever been released. Oh, they made retro game one word. It's two words. Retro game is two words. It's like video game, how it's a controversy of one word or two words. The old school always put it as one word. Newer school video game, they separate it out into two words, whether it's an adjective or noun. That's a whole grammar issue. That's an argument, but that's a whole other conversation. Anyway.
But anyways, yes, it's fantastic. I mean, kudos to the team. This is, you know, this is the progress. This is the culmination of what they've been doing, you know, for years, starting with like the SNK 40th with all of its extensive documentation. And then the Street Fighter 30th with all of the art and the documentation. And, you know, then they really pumped it up again with, you know, the presentation, at least the menus and stuff on the Turtles. And now you've got this. I mean, there are no misses in those compilations. And each one has been improving in some way on the previous one. So I can't wait to see what they do next.
And I postulate with Alex I postulate with Alex that this is a template now for other companies to do this, potentially with their own properties.
Playing it, I was like, I could, you know, Nintendo will never do it. Nintendo will never let a third party handle it. But imagine that with Nintendo, Sega, you know, all of these companies can do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll get to someone from Sega in a little bit. We'll mention it now about the Sega creator, Sonic creator, Yuji Naka being in trouble.
Yeah. Fucking weird as shit. Like, imagine seeing that on my timeline. Insider trading is the allegation. Supposedly he was alerted to, basically, I think it was an announcement about a new installment of Dragon Quest, and he basically bought a shitload of stock beforehand. So he now shares something in common with Martha Stewart, and he'll probably have a cooking show with Snoop Dogg any day now. That's my guess.
I don't know how. So he wasn't working at Square Enix, but he said he found out about it and it's just like, okay, I'm going to do this. When is the line drawn about, I found information about this versus I'm a really good guesser at buying stock? You know, it's like, hey, I just happened to buy, you know, like 20,000 shares of a stock today. You
right.
Know? He bought 10,000. Allegedly bought about 10,000 shares for about 2.8 million yen. What's the conversion that now with the U.S.? It's a lot better. They were arrested under the Financial Instruments and Exchange Act. I'm super familiar with that. According to the Special Investigation Unit, the suspect was an employee of the major game company Square Enix around late 2020, January, when Square Enix and the online company, a game production company Aiming, were jointly developing. In addition, he learned important information about the new game, Dragon Quest Tact, for smartphones. Okay, so had the information back then. Now they know it's, you know, he knew when it was going to be announced, and, you know, so it's like, okay, I see. You get the information back then. I see.
You see.
And a couple others were arrested as well. So there you go. Well, there you go. I have to mention the sad passing of Jason David Frank, because it seems like a lot of people were hit hard by it and understand why. Jason David Frank was the most famous Power Ranger actor, played the Green Ranger, then the White Ranger, then the Red Zeo Ranger, and a couple others, and it was on Dino Thunder in the late 2000s as the old man Power Ranger, which is actually humorous because at the time the actor was only probably like 33 or so, or 34. Maybe he's like the old guy. Obviously, a lot of people grew up with the Power Rangers part of their childhoods. So to see Jason David Frank pass away like that, take his own life, is obviously very disheartening to a lot of people. So that's why I want to comment on it, because obviously he was a huge part of people's childhoods, and he was only 49. It's like so young, still 49, for it to happen. Just sad.
Yeah. I don't have a lot to say. My past few months have been kind of just full of death, and I don't really want to talk about it. And there was the shooting over the weekend, and my hearts are with everyone affected, and it's just the world is a sad place right now. That's all I got.
This was an interesting article. That headline was clickbaity. NFL linebacker retires after selling rare Pokemon card for over $650,000. They didn't retire because they sold the card. They were in the NFL for like nearly 10 years.
I still think it's a pretty funny headline. It's an okay use of clickbait to me. Because I think anyone would know that a football player, no one's necessarily retiring over a 650. Well, a football player is probably going to be able to make a lot more money if they just kept playing. But it was a rare card. It's one of the Illustrator cards, which I don't know the exact story behind it, but I think they were only given to certain. It was a prize card, I think, for a tournament, and then they were given to some people within the company.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Is that why it says Illustrator on it?
Exactly. So like that's what the Illustrator is.
It's like a promo card, basically. Wow.
Yeah, I think it was basically given to artists, and then I think it was a contest giveaway. I could be wrong. Either way, I think it's funny. One, the clickbaity headline was funny. But I think it's just an interesting example of the overlap, how different video games and hobbies are from when we were growing up in the 90s, how much these nerdy hobbies and sports stars, overlap with each other. This is stuff that's enjoyed by everyone at this point.
Sure.
It's not its own niche. Video games, Pokemon, that stuff is followed by everyone. One of my favorite things to see, like when watching NBA games, is like the in-between commercial, like interstitials that they show if you don't have ads, and they like talk about like all the video games that the basketball players are playing and what their favorite Pokemon and shit like that are, and it's just interesting to see how much that landscape has changed.
Well, that's what they grew up with. You grew up with a kid in the late 90s, 2000s. Now you're playing sports, you're in your 20s. Makes sense. So the Illustrator was also Logan Paul's famous card that he bought for like $6 million, was also an Illustrator. It was a Pikachu Illustrator. So it was also one of the Illustrators. I did not know that. He wore it around his neck at WrestleMania. I don't know why you do that if it's worth millions of dollars, but okay, that's his claim to fame. I guess that's why you do that. I don't know what these are worth now. I don't know if that's gone up or down in value, but so it's interesting. It's like the closest thing to an NWC cart, because it's like it wasn't for public consumption, I guess.
Right.
That's interesting. We don't have a transition for this.
No, I guess we don't have a transition.
I actually thought
my stomach made a really weird noise as soon as we got quiet.
I didn't hear. I thought there was another topic. I moved it. That's why. I moved the DinoForce PC engine prototype release. Let's talk about that.
Sure. I guess it's basically, it's just that I only want to bring it up because I can't stand PCE Works. There's a prototype of DinoSource for the PC engine. It's gotten polished up to a finalized version with the involvement of the original game designer, and we'll get a free ROM release later this month.
It's a horizontal shooter, well. Looks like. Horizontal. Yeah.
I want to know how much the involvement of the original game designer was involved, and it also makes it sound like there's only one game designer. I'm generally very anti-PCE Works. They sell extremely high quality bootlegs, and you know it fucks with the market. It's wrong, but you know a lot of these expensive games now that have come out, people need to be more careful. I think they've put more marks on their games as time has gone on, but a lot of their earlier releases were designed to look basically identical to the originals.
I got tricked. I didn't know better because I didn't know it existed. This was, what was this, 3, 4, or 5 years ago when I was trying to buy the rest of the, at least 5 years, when I was trying to buy the rest of the CD North American games. And the Godzilla one, I almost bought by accident. I almost bought it by accident. I clicked it and then I didn't pay for it yet. And I looked at it and I was like, wait a second. Then I saw a real picture. I'm like, that's not the I didn't know just by searching. I was just searching, you know, TurboGrafx CD, you know, Godzilla. And so I almost got screwed over. I almost paid a lot of money for a fake, for a bootleg game. And I was just like, it sucks. But I double checked.
Good news is this is getting a free ROM release. So there is a way to check it out if you don't want to support PCE Works. But problematically, this is not, I don't know what the status of preservation is right now, because this isn't going to be released as is. This is a modified version.
Correct.
of the prototype that was found, polished up to a finalized version.
So yeah, that's the problem. It's like, you're not getting what was actually historically worked on. You're getting something that sat around for 25 years or so, 30 years, and now someone comes in and finishes it up. And so it's like, that's great. We should have the original one preserved somewhere. And I'm sure it is. The other thing is that they try to make it seem like this is official because one of the designers worked on it. It's not an official release.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, I would like to know what the involvement is and what they were given, but they're treating it like one person is the entire team.
No, they don't own the rights to this.
Right.
They don't. And so it's bad because I'm guessing there's some sort of, they're getting a piece of this, I'm guessing, with this release. And all of it just seems, I haven't heard of a situation like this happening before, where someone who worked on the game, probably doesn't have the rights to it, is now in bed with the company making this re-release.
It's very strange.
It's very strange. So I'm not saying you shouldn't buy it, but like, looking at this release, it looks super official. There's a ton of all extra crap. I'm looking at it, it's like, wow, this is like a ton of things. 289 pounds or euros for this. What symbol is that? Euro or pounds? Always get it confused. Euros.
Euro looks like a
yeah. So like, they have a regular one and they have this like one that's going to be like a $300 version that has all this extra stuff on it. And it's just like, yeah, I don't get it. I understand why people like some of the stuff. I just don't understand it personally.
I'll probably check out the ROM, though.
Yeah, but you should also check out ultimatenintendo.com.
You should.
especially for Black Friday. Ian, I was going to ask before, I'll ask you right now. Do you want to do a discount on the CU Podcast enamel pins, stickers, and t-shirts for Black Friday?
Sure, let's do it.
How about 25% off?
Let's do it.
25% crazy off. We thought of it right now. 25% off all CU Podcast t-shirts, enamel pins, and stickers at ultimatenintendo.com starting now until Monday. Go for it.
Monday. Do it.
Until now, until Monday at midnight, meaning got through the weekend. And there's also the certain NES Super Nintendo guidebooks. Sometimes I do a sale on those as well. We'll see. Sometimes. And I got the RBI baseball stickers and everything else. I'll be on Twitch Wednesday a little bit earlier. I might have to do something Wednesday night. Twitch.tv/Contry Code. It'll be like when you used to go, come home from college and you'd hang out with all your friends on Wednesday night before Thanksgiving. That was the great tradition that you had. We'll do that.
Yes.
And then cameo.com/PatContry. And now I'm on Hive Social. Ian, you better register your name. Hive Social. I registered.
I'm on there is Pixel Sickle, PXLSICLE. You won't really find me on there unless Twitter goes entirely down. But add me. Someone took Grape Aid Fade, that asshole.
Uh-oh. Yep. Hive Social might be the one that comes out as the competitor. There's only like supposedly a few people that are working on it, but it's closest to how Twitter works and functions. But obviously, they don't have the resources, but I can picture someone putting money behind there. All you need is like two or three major influencers, sports or movies, someone say, hey, here's $1 million.
Right.
Let's make this up. And then I'll start posting on there and then getting the fans. That's all it takes. It's not impossible. Remember, MySpace used to be the biggest thing in the world at one point.
Yeah.
It's sure. Not Twitter is not too big to fail.
Oh, yeah. No, not at all.
So, you know, and the fact that it's a nice name, Hive. Mastodon is like, what the hell is that? Hive, it's like Beehive. It's like, it makes sense.
Sure.
Branding is a big part of this stuff. It really is. It is. If you can't wrap your mind around it and say, hey, why don't you sign up for Mastodon? Like, what is that? Is that some sort of fucking zoology thing? Like, what? Like, it doesn't, you know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense. And plus, like I said, like, this is the closest. I only tinker around it for a few minutes. It's the closest to Twitter in terms of how it functions. And there's some Instagram photo stuff too. But obviously, it's still hard to search for people's names and stuff like that to find. But like I said, it's super early.
Right.
So
super early. It looks like it's basically the same.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about this funny New York Post article based upon a YouTube video?
I don't really, because it's like. So
what do you mean you don't? You didn't. It's on the docket. You didn't say you don't want to talk about it.
Someone drank like 12 energy drinks in 10 minutes and ended up going to the hospital. And I just want to know why. Why did they do it? I feel like it's dangerous.
So this was a New York Post article that talked about a YouTube video discussing it. The YouTube video is from a clinical pharmacist who they have 2.6 million subscribers. Chubby Emu, it's called. And they do humorous reenactment videos, just like 1,000 Ways to Die. But we know the person in the reenactment that they got from Screenwriters.
Oh, okay. So that was just the reenactment. Oh, God.
Yes. Justin Silverman didn't really go to the hospital, Ian.
Okay.
You thought Justin Silverman went to the hospital?
Yeah, I was like, why didn't I hear about this?
Why do you think I'm laughing about it? Because I wouldn't be laughing if Justin had a heart attack. We've known Justin for years. Ian, you silly goose. No, he was just part of the
reenactment. I wouldn't put it past Justin is the thing.
You're saying Justin would down fucking 12 drinks in 10
minutes? Not modern day, but in the past, it's something I think he probably could have been convinced to do.
Well, Justin Silverman, he works with Screenwave Media. We see him at conventions. He's the person in the reenactment of this. Ian thought he went to the hospital. Why do you think I'm laughing about it? I wouldn't be laughing if Justin went to the hospital. Would I? I don't know. Anyway, that's funny as hell. The YouTube video has 6.5 million views. So it's just it's good shit right there. It's good shit.
Okay, yeah, now it's much funnier.
Now it's like, what do you think? What do you think? I'm a fucking psychopath that I would be laughing at that? Ian, I put down the title. I'm tearing back the fourth wall here. So we have a docket of topics. I had titled it something, and then I forgot what I titled it. Like, oh, this is, you know, weird lonely gamer drinks, you know, 12 energy drinks in 10 minutes. Ian retitled it to Jesus fucking Christ, because he probably realized that it was Justin that went to the hospital. This is like Papa John's. I ate 40 pizzas in 30 days. when he did that interview a year or two ago. Oh boy. Twitter descends into hell. We talked about with Alex last week just how we don't know which way this is going to go with Twitter, but every day there's been a new development, like, hey, you have until tomorrow to opt into still working here, and like, hey, we don't have anyone left that could really code this, So we have to now go back out and ask people to work on that this again that already quit or we fired. So it's just been it's been a trip. It's been a it seems like it's been 6 months, but it's been like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's been amusing to watch from a number of angles. And I haven't rushed out to like really join any other social media sites. I don't think it's going to it's not too big to fail, but I don't think we're quite there yet.
It's gonna be steps. It's gonna be like MySpace didn't disappear overnight.
Right.
It took like a good couple years where people were like, well, this is kind of weird. This is not into this anymore.
Things can definitely fall apart and they are. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's doing anything good for the company, but I don't think it's going to be one of those things where we wake up in the morning and it's just not there. I do think people are looking at alternatives though. Seriously. I do think this is going to be something where someone can come in and shake it up and get people away because people are just unhappy on Twitter right now.
Yeah. And I did look at someone had a long thread. It was a great thread about what can and will go wrong when you like get rid of people that know how to look at the code and undo.
Yeah, things. I read that same thread. It was a good thread.
And it is scary though, because they said like, hey, you push out new code, you can break shit that you don't know how to undo, or it can be undoable. You can't just go backwards in time. Like things like that where, yeah, maybe right now it's okay, but if the people are gone that can maintain this stuff. And he says, like, it's simple things like power going out on certain servers or things that happen where this is something that will degrade over time. It's like maintenance on a house. Like,
yeah,
like
right.
over years. Imagine if like, oh, the furnace goes.
The problems creep in and they get harder to fix 100% because those problems cause more problems, sure. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. A pipe starts to leak and you don't realize it. Now the wall's moldy. Like that's kind of how these super big platforms are. Like that's why you have so many people working there. It's not something where it's like, oh yeah, get rid of these useless workers. They don't know what they're doing. And it's like, I don't know. I think you have to keep some of these people around.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not just, oh, we're just playing ping pong all day in the break room. That's one of the weird things that people are trying to say, oh, look at all the stuff they got there. Well, they're working there. They shouldn't have this stuff. And it's a weird,
there's a weird percentage of this country that wants people to be miserable in their daily lives. That's what they want. They're miserable, so everyone else has to be miserable too. Can't have any nice things. Everything's got
to
suck.
Like, or just say, hey, you know, you should be happy that you get to work 80 hours a week, and it's like, what? Like,
no.
Why is that good? I mean, that used to be the thing in the Gilded Age before you had the labor movement in like the late 1800s, early 1900s. That's why you had this stuff happen.
Yep.
Because that's why you had people like Teddy Roosevelt when he almost got reelected as a third party, because like there was no one standing up for a lot of these workers back then 100 years ago, 120 years ago. God, what year did he try to come in as a third party? 1908, Teddy, I forget. Anyway, so you had at one point in time, there were no labor laws in this country, none. And so people got away with whatever they want. People were, you know, the company store, like you basically worked you use company credit to buy things. So you had to stay with the company, like, and you worked as many hours as they told you to.
So the company script.
Yeah. So there was no weekends at one point. Yeah. There was no weekends. They might've given you like one day off. And they
script where you use their money. They give you a low amount of money to buy things that are higher priced than their own stores.
Yeah, that used to be a thing with factories in this country and working and during the Industrial Revolution and things like that. So, like I said, like I don't understand it. It's really strange. I think some people's brains are just broken for whatever reason at this point. And
cruelty is the point.
To see a worshiping of mistreating people is just bizarre. But maybe that's why when I said to myself, and Alex, I think talked about it a little bit, not on the podcast, but maybe it wouldn't be the worst thing if social media evaporated in some instances, but it's important in others though. So that's why it's like, man, didn't see this coming like this. Did you see a new NWC cart being discovered coming?
Not until this very morning when you alerted me to it. That's interesting. So it's not something that happens every day anymore.
So this came into, I know the person who runs this store. This came into their Connecticut store. Is also one of Huntington Beach Retro Games Plus. I know Chris, who runs the store. He helps run their Retro World Expo in Connecticut with our pal Lance, formerly of Retro Air TV. This was turned in number 345, which I believe is the highest number.
I was going to say, is that the highest number?
I believe so. I knew before it might have been 320s or 310s or 330s. So that's how you know at least they made that many. What's the highest number they found? Well, they made at least 345. There you go. So an older lady came in with it to test it. So this is the first time we're seeing good old 3-4. It's like finding an old friend. An old friend comes. Well, there was that point in time, you remember, before the pandemic, like three were found in like 2019. Remember the storage unit, one or two of them, and then another. So like it's amazing that these are still out there being found. Like literally every year, a new NWC cart, like at least one, it seems like, since we've done the podcast.
Yeah, hey, you're right. I thought it started slowing down.
Oh, we had three in 1 year a few years ago.
You're right. We did. Yeah, because that one that went into the one that was at Pink Gorilla was a new number, right?
I don't remember the Pink Gorilla one. Really? There was a Pink Gorilla one?
I think that was a new number.
I know there was at least one. There was one in Southern California that was found around L.A., I believe. There's one that Stefan helped sell. There was a few. I don't think a new gold one's been found in the past 10 years. Or there might have been one, but I don't think so. You hear murmurings of it, but yeah, there's only 26 of them. So at some point, you're just going to run out of probability of finding one of the ones remaining. But no, it's always exciting to see this. People are still holding on to this stuff. That's why you got to be careful. At least with this, you know, it's actually a rare thing, but you got to be careful when you hear about games going for a lot of money, the seal stuff, because you don't know what people are holding on to. You don't. Not that there's going to be dozens of NWCs released, you know, by one person that has them. That'd be funny though. It's like, oh, I got the 270 series. I got 270, 275. No, I have a feeling that these broke down a lot because these were hand soldered, handmade, and just went
right.
Just got lost or got beat up with grubby kids playing them around the U.S. at locations. Got lost. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
that's why they had to make throw them out. Yeah, imagine instead of cleaning them out, this one's broken, just toss them. They didn't bother to clean them. Well, Nintendo says we can't use rubbing alcohol on Q-tips. Let's just toss them out. And that's why they just tossed them. Could be.
I mean, I honestly always do wonder, like, what percentage of each release have we lost, of any release, you know, have we lost to the dumpster? You know, I mean, whatever, you know, if something's 10,000 have been released, you know, there's not 10,000 out there.
Maybe it's,
what is it really?
You lose 20%, you lose 30. Like, yeah, what do you actually lose?
I would love to see a study on that if there's any way to do it, but I don't know how you would.
I don't. Yeah, you'd have to like do it. You'd have to like, that's a longitudinal study. Now I'm interested.
Yeah, it would have to be like a very long term.
It'd have to be like, hey, all these kids bought these Star Wars toys between 80 and 83, and 20 years later, like how many are still around just from like this one town, I guess? You could do it like that.
Right.
That's really interesting. I think about the Star Wars stuff a lot because I don't know. Did I mention to you that someone uncovered a huge amount of like shipping boxes that several hundred brand new figures?
Yeah, for a certain number, for a few of the toys, I think you told me about that.
It was more than a few. It was a lot.
Oh, okay.
But it was shipping containers of ones from early 80s to mid 80s. And this stuff is out there. I always talk about, like, you don't know who, when, like, these stores close down. We saw it with games, mostly with, like, the rental shops and, you know, closing down. I've heard multiple stories of people saying, yeah, discovered a rental shop. Or, you know, I bought all these games because these rental shops were closing. And in the late 90s, like, this stuff goes to other places. Or it gets liquidated. Someone picks it up. And that goes the same for new items. Like I always talked about, I remember probably being 6-7 years old going to, I don't know if they're still around, Odd Job. It was a, you know, discount closeout store in New Jersey and New York. Whole aisle of Star, I mean, entire aisle on the pegs of Star Wars toys in the late 80s.
Oh. Like,
They made a bajillion of these things.
Right.
It was the most popular toy probably of the 80s. And you take into account early 80s to like mid, like tons of toys. Probably G.I. Joe surpassed him probably.
He-Man.
Yeah, I guess.
It wasn't really in the late 80s.
Yeah. Like that's another thing. Like what probably sold the most, but Star Wars, at least for the first 3-4 years, absolutely.
Yeah, I wonder if they were even keeping track of that stuff back then.
No, but like that's the thing. It's like they sold these everywhere. It's not hard to find these figures. It's just the doing the math of, okay, if they sold a million figures, how many are still not open somewhere? You know, and you just do that for all these individual figures.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought that was interesting. I did bring it up to you before, but it was all the rage a couple weeks back on the toy forums about that. So that's still happening. This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by Retrobit.
Retrobit is back and bringing another high-quality set of re-releases to the table. This time it's Valus, one of my personal all-time favorite series of action platformers. Help Yuko take on the dark world with weapons, spells, and precise platforming. This magical gale kicks serious tuckus. The three Genesis games will be getting the excellent Retrobit treatment we love. Valus is a 16-bit remake of the original title, and Valus 3 introduces Yuko's friends. And then there's Cid of Valus, a cute spin-off with super deformed, cutesy graphics. Each game comes in a replica Genesis hard case with a full-color manual and reversible art. These cases are solid, they feel like the real deal. I love them. If you buy all three, you'll get a master slipcase to store them all attractively and an acrylic standee featuring Yuko and her friends. These aren't the same games on the Valus collections for the Switch. These are the Genesis versions, which have previously not seen re-release. There is no overlap between the existing collections and these games. These are playable on all original Genesis and European Mega Drive systems, plus most clones. They will not play on any Japanese Mega Drive systems. They just don't fit.
Each Valus title is available separately or all three bundled together with the acrylic stand featuring the characters and the slipcase. Pre-orders are open until November 27th. If you're in North America, you can order at Castlemania Games or Limited Run Games. Or if you're in Europe, you can go to Strictly Limited Games, Dragon Box Shop, Spielosant, or Just for Games. Want to march into the main topic, Ian?
Oh, it's just a little old main topic. I don't know if anyone heard about it, but a video came out last week that you should probably watch. It's a small video. It's a short video by someone not very well known.
H-Bomber Guy. I believe his name is Harris.
Yes. H-Bomber Guy, big YouTuber, put out a two-hour-long video. And I never watch YouTube videos. Ever. I don't like watching video. I'm not a huge movie guy. I don't watch TV often. And YouTube has never been my way of absorbing information. But this video had me from beginning until end. And
it was gripping, right? It was gripping.
Yes. It starts out with a little bit of the history of the oof sound effect, made famous in Roblox. And obviously anyone who's been following us, you know, we've been talking about, you know, this has come up when referring to a certain person named Tommy Tallarico. So it starts as a look into the history of the oof sound effect. And at about the halfway point, you get kind of an answer.
Not halfway. It's not even close to halfway.
No, I'm sorry, not halfway. Half an hour. Half an hour. I meant to say, because it's really like right at the 30-minute mark.
Can I only play the oof sound real quick?
Sure.
That's the sound. This is the death sound. That was a death sound.
What the video turns into, and you know, this person, Harris?
I believe it's Harris.
Harris. Really enjoyable person to watch, by the way. I can see why he's wildly popular.
Yeah, he's done videos
he's great.
Talking about the anti-vax movement, about climate denial, why Ben Shapiro's an idiot. He has a famous Aquaman Ben Shapiro meme thing, which is hysterical. So
yeah, I'll have to catch up on some of those because I really did enjoy. Great. I really enjoyed his delivery and his style. But anyways, so it starts off as this exploration of oof and then turns into a layer by layer. As he peels through layers, he starts to learn about our favorite person, Tommy Tallarico. And it becomes an investigation into Tommy Tallarico, the lies told by Tommy Tallarico, how these lies compound, and how an entire history of believing his lies, you know, leaves us with something like we have an accurate record. We don't know exactly what parts of his career are even true at this point, you know, is basically what it comes down to. And it ends up being a look at how easy it is to rewrite history, even in a burgeoning new area. I mean, we really only have, you know, 50, you know, video games have about a 50 year history right now. That's a young history. That's a young past, if that makes sense. And it shows just how easy, even in such a young, barely formed area, it is to, you know, change the facts.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's fantastic. So that's what it is. It goes through a number of the things that we've talked about on here and haven't talked about. It goes through his Guinness World Records. It goes through the undeclared. Hello. Hi, guys.
Hey, Spike.
Hi, Spike. There you go, Spike.
It goes through a lot of Tommy's past claims. Most of them we went through on the podcast over the past years. Like you said, the Guinness World Records. Being involved in games that there was no record of him actually working on, games like Metroid Prime, where it's like, what did you actually do on this? Like what did you really do? Working personally, quote unquote, hand in hand with Shigeru Miyamoto, which we've lambasted how insane that is. I think I said at one time Miyamoto wouldn't be able to pick him out of a lineup.
Right.
And really peels back the deceitful history of really, I'll just call him a charlatan, really pumping up their accomplishments. Did they accomplish nothing? No, they did things in the industry. Tommy did things in the industry,
yes,
but did not work on 350 games. The number in the video was probably closer to really like 60 to 70 games being associated with. And just really looking at an individual who's built their career on a house of cards. It's at least their reputation to get to this point. And while I was watching it, I said to myself, well, this is interesting because you're going to introduce a lot of people to Tommy's, his lies and what type of person he is, a whole new audience of people that hadn't heard of him before, and a lot of people that had. And like you said, this is someone who's basically trying to change history about changing credits at who actually worked on things. Like one of the things about Roblox that was interesting that we brought up, we covered this months back, and why they took it out of the game, because Roblox, Tommy argued that they stole this song Roblox from this game Messiah, that Tommy Tallarico Studios did the sound design on. But Tommy Tallarico Studios was just Tommy farming out work to other people, including Joey Curris, who was a sound engineer, who still works to this day. That was why I like this video a lot, Ian. We learned that Joey Curris has worked on a lot of stuff, including he's still working in the industry. He's still working on Fortnite, sound in Fortnite. Like, this is a prolific person who has worked in the industry for, like, over 30 years. And I don't know much of his accomplishments because people like Tommy Tallarico are burying them.
Right. But luckily it brought him, you know, some recognition that he deserves.
So we talked about before how Roblox, Tommy was trying to get money out of him. By the way, in the video, the insane video where Tommy's attacking Roblox and then like saying, oh, I want to work with these guys, but, you know, they owe me money. Saying that the degree of the offer was off by 100 times.
Nice.
He said they offered 100 times less than what Tommy wanted. So I'm guessing, I'm just doing pat math, that they probably offered him something like $10,000 and he wanted like $1 million.
Yep.
That's what my base thought is that you, something around that, you think? Something like that?
My guess is 50,000 and he wanted something like 5 million.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm giving him too much of the benefit of the doubt because like what you said is probably closer to the truth. I'm like, well, maybe $1 million is still crazy, but not too crazy. He probably, yeah, that's probably what it was. Or like 25,000 for $2.5 million. So Tommy wanted all this money, but Roblox said, well, we just got this sound from a sound pack. And so, you know, we didn't steal it. So it delved into the history. And then Tommy claimed Joey Curris's name is on the sound file in the metadata from exported from SoundForge. So which means that they processed it at least. Tommy kept changing his story about, well, I don't know. You know, I worked on it. We did all this processing and pitching. And
This is my single favorite part of the video. And this is this, I really wanted to talk about this. Everything is, you know, is interesting and everything else is important. But this segment of the video was masterfully edited and put together because it, you can see the thoughts working in Tommy's head in real time, the way he puts it together, the way he makes that first tweet created by Joey Curis. Then starts using we, then deletes it. Then he has that Roblox stream he does where you're right. He's literally trying to make it sound like he was in the room and we did a lot of, you know, editing and trimming and, but he never gets right down.
EQing.
Says, I made that sound effect. Huh?
Yeah. We did a lot of EQing and I'm looking at
a lot
like,
of EQing. It's like, no, you haven't. I mean, you can play that sound effect again.
This is the final sound effect. Let me play it again. This is in Roblox. That's the sound effect. So
there is no he desperately tries, and then you can see him getting whipped up into a frenzy in his weird make-believe world where this is an important sound, you know, never thinking that maybe the sound effect became important because the game was popular.
Yes.
He tries to make this fucking crazy argument that the game is popular because of this one sound effect.
I can't
he spends all of this time showing you how Tommy goes from not caring about it to finding out the game is popular to suddenly trying to make it his own thing. And in real time, you can see him struggling, trying to find a way to do that. And it exposes him so beautifully in a relatively quick point of time.
And again, this is a quarter second sound time. That I wish Harris commented on. We commented on that. I'm not sure legally you can copyright small short sounds. Otherwise people can copyright small sounds that end up being used anywhere or close to it's you can't do it the same way you can't trademark common words. You can't trademark like the word the, obviously,
right?
So that's not even clear that you could even copyright that. But then it's not clear still who made the sound, because Tommy says in that video that, oh, we were in the room with people that worked from Insight Studios.
Yeah, Shiny.
Shiny. Yeah. At Shiny Entertainment was in the room. And then we recorded a young girl's sound. Tommy says this, and this goes to the point of what happens when someone constantly lies. You get worn and broken down thinking, well, they have to tell the truth at some point in time, right? Not right. Everything can be a lie. So even I think Harris should have stopped and said, well, why would that even be true that Tommy said that? Like, what evidence is true that when Tommy said that we recorded this girl working, why is that even potentially true?
I mean, at some point you got to stop investigating too. I mean, you can't keep going down these.
I'm not blaming Harris, but I'm saying like that goes to what happens when someone who is a habitual pathological liar, you get worn down like that. So it was on the Reset Era forums where people were saying, I think I heard this oof sound before even Messiah. And I'm going to play this clip here. This appeared at least twice in the movie, this animated film from the late 90s. It was like 97 called Cats Don't Dance. There's a penguin character in the movie that gets swatted away and makes an oof sound that is not identical, but it's pretty close, and you can picture it being the same sound as the oof sound, just pitched a little bit and with some echo / reverb effect put on. So let me play this. This is like 5 seconds in here. You hear that oof?
Yeah. Yeah. Could be.
It's pretty damn close.
Yeah.
I'll play it again. And that appears more than once. People are saying like that's like 95%, 99% the same sound. And it's just obviously it's been tinkered with. So either they got that sound from somewhere else, from the person that worked on the sound design of Cats Don't Dance, or it's the actor who played the penguin kid. They actually recorded that sound. Either way, I don't think it's copyrightable under law. So no. Like that's an interesting little twist here. Like that sound could have been in a sound pack or pulled from the movie to be used in Messiah. Either way, I mean, Joey knows the answer. And Joey wasn't contacted. Maybe he doesn't want to talk about it. But like
no one should contact Joey. Joey will talk to people if Joey wants to talk to people.
Sure. But that's, he's really the one that actually knows the truth about that sound at the end of the day. It's not, I don't think it's Tommy. So, but that's only a half hour into the video. There's another 90 minutes after that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much H Bomber Guy knew about Tommy. I don't know if he followed some of the podcast, but he said that
I think he said he was pretty well unaware of him.
But he went down the rabbit hole that we've gone down in bits and pieces about, you know, the Guinness crap. We might have mentioned the Cribs thing once or twice, how it probably wasn't Cribs, because who the hell is Tommy Tallarico? But it really goes down looking at someone's...
No, we knew it wasn't Cribs beforehand. Someone had already pointed out.
Yeah.
I mean, that was all stuff that we knew.
So it was interesting to see, again, a larger YouTuber with a much sizable audience than us really pull the layers back and really, like, again, at some point you have to start seeing, is anything truthful from this person? Right. Is anything? Everything's a lie. Being an MTV Cribs, the Guinness records are all lies. Harris got one inadvertently taken down, or his assistant did Cat who emailed them about it.
His assistant did.
So it's kind of funny, but it's also kind of sad, just because how does someone get into positions of power? How does someone start running video games live for like 10 years? How do they get to this point where where people know where the bodies are hidden with Tommy Tallarico, but like no one either wanted to speak up or felt they couldn't point out, like, hey, this is bullshit, what a lot of this guy's going on. So I understand that it's tough to get that sort of motion in gear, but now people are starting to come out. People in the comments of this video are like, hey, yeah, we were, you know, student orchestra thinking we were working on something for someone's project. And then we end up coming to this event where tickets are paid for and we weren't paid anything to play this music. And it's like, holy shit. Holy shit. Yeah. So how much of this going on is actually honest? And then obviously gets to where Tommy's lies got him indicted, and he's, you know, convicted of a misdemeanor, which was trying to carry $102,000 back into the U.S. from Brazil.
And when they catch him with the money and ask why he didn't why he didn't declare it, because it was more money than you're allowed to travel over the border with, he then just straight up admits to doing a crime and said, oh, I had distributed it between my employees and now I'm taking it back. You literally just admitted to structuring, like it's an okay thing to do.
Yeah.
No street smarts, no common sense.
Which I don't think he actually did in reality, but he was trying to be cool about it either way. So we knew about this crime earlier in the year. We never really talked about it because I forget why. I almost feel like I wish we should have, because it really shows what type of, I guess, dishonest that he is in doing it. And that if he could try to fool around with money and hide it and obfuscate the truth, that what is he going to do with the money that you invested in the company?
Right, exactly.
What are you going to do? So I'm glad that H Bomber Guy brought up about, this is where the video went to. The Amico was only about 15 minutes total out of this video, maybe 20. It wasn't a huge amount about it.
That's what was amazing to me, was how little the Amico got focused and how little you needed of the Amico.
Sure.
Honestly.
But because you could have talked about all the lies about not taking pre-order money. You're not gonna be able to buy it until you can play it. You know, things like that.
But I think he covered the most. I mean, he had to, you know, it's a 2-hour video. There's only so much he could have gotten done. And I do think he did focus on the most important part. If you're trying to make it look like he shifts the truth and lies to people to improve his standings and narrative, focusing on the Jay Allard and Kara Acker part was probably the best part to focus on.
Because that's what got him in trouble with the SEC that we reported on, whenever that was, last year, from the Republic thing. When they kept saying that, hey, Jay Allard, founder of Xbox, is working on this in February of 2021, when Jay Allard was like, hey, I was gone last summer. I've been gone for the company for like 6 months.
Right.
I've been out there 6-7 months. That's called fraud. That H Bomber Guy was kind of dancing around that. He's like, what do you call this when you lie to ask for money? That's fraud.
God.
So I don't know. I think there'll be a lot more stories coming out. This video is going to be seen several million times, potentially, like a lot of his other videos.
It's already been seen over, I mean, it was seen over a million times in 2 days.
It's like 1.5 million now. And this isn't like, I don't almost want to say I told you so. That's almost too simple to say we told you so about Tommy, but we did. But it shouldn't, I think, get to the point where it takes a YouTuber with, you know, millions of followers to do this video. Like, it shouldn't have gotten this point. I think Tommy should have been confronted, quote unquote, publicly before it got to this. And maybe it takes a big YouTuber to do that. Someone bigger than us. But like, this was stuff that was known, a lot of this, for years. And he took people's money lying to them for years. And that's all, like, you can't undo that. Those people aren't, the people that put in their $100, most of them aren't getting their money back. The people that were defrauded, the investors lied to, they're not getting their money back. They're done. That's never gonna be undone.
And I think also, though, it's more, I agree, we shouldn't have gotten to this point, but Tommy was most important and effective in, you know, the 90s and early 2000s.
Sure.
As it is now, and information was not as widely available. And we've seen that Tommy is at least up to a prolific and master liar. You know, the lies start small and paint a base coat, and, you know, he gets in with one person that you trust, and, you know, his legend grows. Now we're at the point where all of this is coming together. Now we're at the point where Tommy Tallarico has truly exposed himself as an untrustworthy person and a liar, and and we're finally there. So I don't think it's necessary. I don't think the fault lays with any one person in particular, but now we are at that point where it's like, okay, this guy sucks and we've got to divest ourselves from them.
Sure. But I mean, like, 2.5 years ago, we were saying this guy's lying about this console coming out, and it's obvious because there's 3 or 4 important job listings. I think that was June of 2020, where, like, I will say that was the turning point where we started getting attacked viciously by his followers, because we realize, hey, this is now scammy. We know this is not coming out October 2020. This is the hard proof. Firmware engineer, software engineer. There was, I think, a manufacturing job. Remember that? Where it was like, these are like, yes, 3-4 jobs. Where it was like, there's no way in God's green earth this is coming out. And that's the point I would hope that people would have looked into it. Would have been like, wait a second. They're asking for a ton of money for this. They have pre-orders for this console that they say is coming out, and here's evidence directly that it's not. And I guess in a perfect world, there would have been more people, at least someone on board, to be like, hey, what the fuck is happening here that early? Because that was, again, that was still 7-8 months before the Republic campaign at that point in time, sure, that June 2020. So I'm not sure what the lesson is to be learned on this, but I do think people at some point have to question themselves and who they follow. And you can't just blindly say, hey, I think this is going to work out because of the person working on it's Tommy. You have to look at what has this person actually done. And at some point,
I think that's the thing. I think a lot of people were looking at what he had done, and I don't think that had started to fall apart enough yet at that point.
But sure. But I mean, at that point, what had he done in the past 10 years? Video games live. Like, that was it.
Sure.
And again, it goes back to what happened with Mike Kennedy, where you had some people thinking he can come out with the retro RVS / Coleco Chameleon. Oh, well, he runs an eBay style website for video games, and he does a magazine, therefore he can launch a video game console. And it's like, that's not how this works. It's not.
Well, I mean, same as he has a touring orchestral show. It's not the same as launching a video game system.
And
everyone can be good at everything.
Sure. And you can know people. You could you can have people in the industry that you might have been friendly with that might be able to help you. But if you're still the one running the show and you have no experience, it's not going to matter. If you're still making the bad decisions, and that's going to come out about what the decisions were actually made and when, at what time point, and how they squandered all this money. H. Baumgart talked about, they squandered money on these, money on these two offices. That's not where a bulk of the money went, though. That was a chunk of change. How about the loans they repeat themselves with interest in this, and the salaries on top? That's where a lot of the money went.
I mean, no need to argue about what was stupider there, but yes.
That's where the money went. That, to me, is what was more nefarious. It's like, yeah, we have offices, sure, but it's like, dude,
That was dumb, but it wasn't as nefarious.
Yeah, it's not as fair as, hey, we're to pay ourselves $300,000-$400,000 a year and then pay out these loans and make sure we get interest back so we don't lose money on this and the interest at exorbitant rates. That's where it's like, what exactly is this? Is this a straight-up investment scam masquerading as a console project? Or it's like, yeah, we'll do some work to make it seem like we're doing a console. We'll have some college kids probably in Germany make some of these games on the cheap. And then we'll just, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I can see that. Because a lot of scam products are actual products in some form. They have to show that it's some product in some form. And then it falls apart. Like I said, it doesn't start off a scam, but it becomes a scam.
Yes. So. No. Yeah, very much. It's easy to get into scammy territory.
Yeah, it is. So I'm really not trying to get in my soapbox, but people in the retro gaming community have to really be careful about who they associate and promote when it comes to this stuff. I'm tired of history repeating itself every 2-3 years when it comes to these things. I just am. And I know people are going to say, well, we can't be cynical about everyone, or we have to give some people the benefit of the doubt. You can't do that when you're asking for money up front. You just can't. You can't. That's the line when it comes to this stuff. If people want to fund their own stuff and then come out with it, and they have a track record of doing it and putting out good products, that's different. If it's a startup company with no record of putting out the product and asking for money up front, it is your duty to your, not just your audience, but to yourself, to be hypercritical of these sort of things. So this doesn't happen. But unfortunately, it didn't happen with a section of the You Want to Say community. So there you go. Any last thoughts? Oh, you muted yourself, Ian. I didn't do that. Ask to unmute. It's a little red microphone, Ian.
There it is. Yeah, no, I've been muting myself when I cough, and I forgot to unmute myself. No, I thought it was, I have nothing more to add. It's a great video. If you haven't watched it, go watch it. If you think 2 hours sounds long, if you've ever watched any of our Miko coverage with Glee and you haven't watched this, go. I mean, it was as exciting as any movie I've seen. I don't ever watch shit that long. And I was like, no, this is good. I think I took like one 10-minute break to make like a bagel. It's worth watching.
Should we pay to have a screening at the lot? We can go and we can sell tickets. We can do a Q&A before and afterwards. We can have food. We can bring our food. That'd be funny. Ian, we have a Patreon.
We do. Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go, you get a little money, And then you get access to the full video podcast. You get bonus podcast stuff. Like this morning, we talked about the World Cup and our experiences with watching the World Cup.
And Pat playing floor hockey and getting beaten up.
Pat playing floor hockey and getting beaten. Pin Club. I do writing about once a week. There will be one this week. I took last week off.
And you vote on this poll, right?
And you can vote on this poll.
In second place, thoughts on VR and the new PSVR 2 price tag, 26%. No one wanted that. 26% did. And in first place, will physical next-gen games go up in value, the physical copies, in the future due to scarcity caused by the onset of digital gaming? And this is a recommendation from @RickHoward.
I really liked this question. Because I think there's kind of, it's weird. There's two ways to look at it. Obviously we've seen more and more people adopt digital downloading. You know, it's popular. It's a thing.
What the kids do.
When it first came out, you know, during the 360 era, a lot of people balked at it. It was expensive. Things never went on sale. That's changed. There's always sales going on. There's, you know, every game gets a digital release. It's not just some games.
Sure.
It's convenient for a lot of people, you know, for suburbs and, you know, rural living people in middle America where maybe there aren't as many game stores. It's way easier to just be like, all right, I'm going to pre-order this. It's going to auto download to my system. I don't have to drive anywhere. I don't have to go anywhere. I cut out the mailman. It's a very easy thing.
Cut out the mailman. That sounds violent.
So it's an easy thing that a lot of people like. These systems have larger hard drives. They can store more. And as we've spoken about, you know, with how some of these games get launched these days and what state they get launched in, it's pretty important to have, you know, the patches and stuff. So to me, that can, you know, especially on a certainly right now on a case by case basis, diminish the value of a physical copy. Because if you were to put that physical copy into a system with no connection, no internet, no anything like that, you're not really playing the same game. An example for me is Mario Tennis Ace is a game that I absolutely adore for the Switch. They patched out so many balance issues in that game and added like 9 more characters and courses that to pop that game into a Switch cold with no internet, you're playing half the game. So physical copies start to mean less when you feel like you don't have the complete ownership over them. You've got half a game, or you don't have the game in its best playable state. And suddenly, what's kind of the point of holding on to that physical copy? Is it just because it looks nice on the, you know, it looks nice on the shelf? I mean, maybe. That's different for stuff like, that's generally different for the more indie type stuff that we see, the stuff that gets released by like the small, you know, limited presses, like limited runs, special edition games, grade A Angus releases. I have
strictly the rarest game ever incorporated.
This is the rarest one. This one, buy it. LTD. You know, those are usually smaller independent games that are finished by the time that they are put on you know, disc or cartridge, or they're going to be closer to what it would be even after it's patched. Which brings me to this. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of value in physical copies of AAA games as time gets on. That is the stuff that is heavily patched. I think it's going to look very different from what the game finally looks like at the end of its life cycle. I don't think there's any collector's value. I don't think there's any real material value to those. I do think that physical editions of smaller indie games that are more or less complete upon release, I do think those will go up in value as time goes on, as more people switch to switch more heavily to digital downloads.
Yeah, you made some good points there. There's no reason for the popular games to be collectible in the future just because a lot of people would not have bought the physical game anymore. So why would they be nostalgic for that? You know, it's so right. Sort of like what Modern Warfare 2, the new one, like, which only has 80 megs on the disc anyway.
70, sir.
70. Oh, sorry, 70. So it's both a practical reason why they wouldn't be interested, but also nostalgic. You don't have nostalgia for buying the disc anymore. Why? Like, because you didn't buy it when you were, say you're like 17 years old buying Modern Warfare 2, the second Modern Warfare 2, Call of Duty. Why would you care then 10 years later or 15 years to buy it again if that's not how you experienced it to begin with? Why?
True. But I mean, also owning it is, you know, is meaningless. So even as like a novelty or, you know, token, it's useless.
But odds are, yes, you wouldn't be able to use it anyway because there may not be servers around 15-20 years now from now to re-download the game.
And yes, people will collect things that they can't use. Sure. You know, I mean, it's something that happens, but I just don't see there being the appeal there for it.
Yes, there is some level of for some stuff of practicality for collecting, in my opinion, there is. It could probably vary based upon what you're collecting, but I don't think retro game collecting would not have taken off if you could not actually play these games. It would not have taken off. There was some applicability to collecting it to help to get to the point. You can argue, like, yeah, now you're not playing all your games, but yes, I wouldn't have gotten the games at all to begin with, you know, 20 years ago if I couldn't play them. Like, why would I have bothered? What am I actually buying at that point? I'm buying plastic shells with that were made in the hundreds of thousands or millions with printed art on it, which goes against the argument again about why, oh, the game cases themselves are art. No, they contain art. They're not art themselves. It's a mass produced art. It's a mass produced product. You know, that's they don't get that anyway.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think records. I mean, that's half the reason I like records is the art, and that's a mass produced product.
But I would argue it's not art itself. It's a representation of the art, if that makes sense. It represents the art. It's not a one to one.
I don't need to get into this one, but
it'd be an Alex conversation like last week,
right?
So that's the thing. It's will there be a collector market in the future to raise the prices if there's no nostalgia for the object at its time? And I would argue no. I don't think there will be. You're going to rely on people then going back to dead physical media that they may not have even interacted with 20 years before. And sure. I just don't see in my head how there's any parallel to any other collectible that's ever existed where you didn't grow up with it, you didn't have any involvement with it. Now all of a sudden you want to start buying this stuff and it goes up in value more when it comes to that. And I can't think of another one. I can't think of like a toy that got popular 25 years afterwards that no one had when it came out. You know, you know what I mean? I don't think about things like that happening like that. It defies logic in my eyes. Maybe you have an example where like something became popular that no one had 30 years ago that now there's a market for it. But it's kind of tough. It would be kind of be like, well,
I'm sure they're out there, but I would love to read a listicle based on that.
Yeah, it's like
I would like to know because there's not many.
Are there people clamoring for Visionaries toys? You know, it was a cool cartoon at the time, but no one watched it. He's Googling Visionaries probably.
No, I know about Visionaries. Visionaries is great.
But that stuff would only be worth any amount of money because it was produced in low quantities. It's like the TurboGrafx-16 argument. It's like, well, they made such low amounts that even if a little bit amount of people get in, it's worth money. But for a mass produced item that people, you know what I mean, to go back and buy the version that they didn't ever own 20 years later, that's a weird argument to be made, in my opinion. You know, I don't know. 8-year-olds aren't buying physical media. 10-year-olds aren't being gifted it. I picture parents giving their kids, hey, here's the download code. It's already on your system for Christmas, right? That seems like that would be more of a real thing to me. At this point. Or here's a gift card to, you know, get your own games. You know, that's what you're like. My uncle got me Ikari Warriors. Thank you, uncle. Back in, you know, Christmas of whatever, 87, New Year's 88. But nowadays I can't picture being an uncle and giving a child a physical game that's like 6 years old. That almost be like, because I would want them to have the physical, but they would be like, what is this? What's this disc thing? What is this? I can picture kids transition to that point where they'll be dumbfounded by the media. Be like, wait, what am I doing? Why are you? It'd be like giving a 5-year-old an audio cassette for like a children's song. They can just go on YouTube on their tablet. You know what I mean? Right. It's like, what are you doing, old timer? So, like I said, it's interesting. Are there examples? I just looked up PS5 rare game and I see Binding of Isaac, PS5, brand new, sealed in hand. Someone's trying to get $175 for it, but then someone says it's very rare. They only want $60. So I don't understand it. Are they trying to manufacture a market?
It's also people just, yeah, exactly. They're trying to manufacture a collector's market for a system that's been out for 2 years.
Well, is that what, I guess that's the next step for that? I don't know.
I guess.
Binding of Isaac PS4, is that worth money? No, that's nothing. It's like $30. So I don't know. This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by EarthySelect.com, your source for the finest Delta 8, Delta 9, and Delta 10 THC flower, oils, pre-rolls, vape pens, cartridges, and edibles. Their premium adult-use products are crafted from organic cannabis and infused with pure and potent THC extracts for effects you can feel.
Delta 8, Delta 9, and Delta 10 THC products are perfect for relaxing, socializing, getting creative, and going deep in the game. Plus, they're hemp-derived and federally legal to ship nationwide. Let's look at some of their most popular products. Earthy Select's Delta 8 vape pens are packed with potent Delta 8 plus cannabis-derived terpenes. They have a stealthy ergonomic design that gives you a quick hit with no lag, making it perfect for gaming. Each rechargeable pen has 1 gram of Delta 8 THC and is available in 4 great-tasting flavors like Guava Kush or my personal favorite, the Cherry Pie. They pack light and are excellent on the go. Earthy Select also makes THC gummies and candies that are organic, vegan, gluten-free, and taste great. They all come in different strengths, so you can start low and see what's right for you. The Delta 8 gummies can be really relaxing and heady, while the Delta 10 is more associated with feeling productive and creative, so it's great for daytime projects or an all-night role-playing session. The Delta 9 gummies are impressive. They have real-deal D9 THC, and they come in sativa peach, or indica mango.
They have a huge variety on the website, so check it out. EarthySelect.com. All of Earthy Select's cannabis products are federally compliant, and they ship nationwide. Order online at EarthySelect.com and use the coupon code CUP20 to save 20% on your first order. No limits. Must be 21 or older. That's EarthySelect.com and use code CUP20 to save 20% on THC. Earthy Select. Select your adventure. We'll see. All right, we got voicemails.
We do.
We got what do we got? Anchor.fm/CUPodcast. You go. You leave us a voicemail. 20 seconds is like the perfect mark for me, and then we can play it and hopefully amuse you or educate with the answers.
Hello, Pat and Ian. This is Sam calling from India. Thanks. I have a question for Ian. What are your opinions about Analog Pocket after all these months, and especially after OpenFPGA got released, which has opened other systems to ROMs and many other systems? Thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
I wish I had.
You've been asked like twice. You feel like you have to get it. To see.
Yeah, I've been asked. I promise next week sometime I will update my Analog Pocket and start to look into all the stuff.
You want
to
do what again? You want to do what? You want to
update
your pocket?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll update my pocket. Life has been busy. I just haven't gotten around to it. I have been. The thing is it's not that the pocket is going unused. I've been using the shit out of my pocket, but I've literally just been using it to play Game Boy and Game Boy Advance games. Like, I have not updated it or gotten into any of the other stuff. So I love the system based on how it was sold to me. Like, I like how it was I enjoy what it was meant to do. All of this extra stuff is going to be great. I just need to make the time.
Hey, Pat and Ian, what's up? This is Mike from Chicagoland.
Mike.
Pat, I was hoping that we could dig back into a question that was asked some time ago, a little more respectful this time. I am really curious how it is that you met Frank, and did you meet him after you had moved out to San Diego, or did you know him from Jersey initially?
Oh, that's you know, I get asked this a lot, and my response is this.
Let's face it, Rich. You know damn well, both me and you, if we had the opportunity to get a lap dance from the Little Mermaid, we'd be all over it. True or false?
Good point. Good point. I'm not going to deny that.
That I thought that'd be funny. I haven't played that one in a while.
That's good.
That's an oldie but goodie. Next.
Hello, Pat and Ian. Brent here from Whippany, New Jersey. I was just watching Unsolved Mysteries, Season 6, Episode 6. It's the Lake Wales, Florida haunting. You got to hear this line by Robert Stack. Oh. Listen.
I don't know what happened. It just turned the corner and disappeared.
An Allen man of Lake Wales, Florida began claiming that he had a ghost in his bedroom. His parents poo-pooed the idea that the house was haunted. That was that. Until Alan got married and a 16-year-old...
All right. Not only could I not believe that legends of a man read that line, isn't that what happened to you in your childhood home? They poo-pooed the notion of you having seen a ghost? All right. I don't know. I thought it was funny.
If I was Robert Stack, I'd have creative control on my script. I would not say, I'm not saying poo-pooed. I think I used that last week on the podcast with Alex. Yes, my parents did poo-poo the idea of ghosts, even though they ended up all seeing the stuff. Yes, that is really funny.
I'm known as a murderer of crows. I'm a good friend of John Hancock. I wanted to thank you guys for coming into the Saturn Lounge at the Portland Retro Gaming Expo.
Well, I didn't. But I think Ian did. I did not have the chance.
I did, and Vonnie did. Yeah.
Just heard your little shout outs about your experience at the lounge, and I wanted to tell you that the collection in the corner, actually about 60% of the items that were there, were actually from my personal collection. And it is a complete US set, including all variants and all demos. John, love him to death. He's got a complete US set, but without all the extra demos or variants. Thanks.
Well, I don't know what the bell was. Someone coming in the shop. Was that subtle shade thrown at John Hancock? Love him to death, but he doesn't have all the variants. It's like variant Sega Saturn shaming.
We're going to fight.
Love him to death.
That Sega Saturn lounge was fantastic. I loved it. And they were cool folks. And Vonnie in particular really enjoyed talking to them and checking it all out.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Bryson calling from Vancouver, BC. Longtime listener, first-time caller. This is just my application to be on the podcast, as I know nothing about retro video game collecting, sealed or unsealed. But I promise not to pressure you or force you into a conversation at a convention. In all seriousness, with that story in mind, Pat and Ian, I'm wondering what was your most memorable or pleasant interaction with a fan? Love you guys. Have a wonderful day and keep up the good work.
I'll story real quick. There was a God, they used to be kids. I'm awful with names, but I'll recognize the faces. There was a must have been 18, 19. Kid came up to me at Retrobalooza. What was that? Was that a month ago only? About a month ago. And they said, "Hey, you recognize me?" And I was like, this is a kid. It's always he's a dealer. He'll trade up to get games, but he'll try to constantly do these deals, kind of be sneaky. I was like, "Yeah, I remember you," but I remember him from the 5 years before when he was 13, 14. So we did a deal for a limited edition NES guidebook for some of the games that he had because he didn't have all the cash for it. So we worked out some deal. So I was like, I remember that kid because he was always super nice, but he was always like, you see the same kid throughout the weekend with different game. I'll be like, "Hey, where'd that other game go? Oh, I traded up for this game." It was like that Powerball, but the kid always trading stuff, I think. But in reality, so anyway, that kid was always nice. That's a recent nice one.
I've had lots of really great interactions, but one that I always just kind of point at when this kind of conversation comes up, and I hate it because I can't remember his name now. And I believe he follows me on Twitter as well. And I still see him every year. Anyways, first year I did Portland, guy comes up to me, puts two Takate tall boys down on the table and goes, "I really like what you do. Thanks." And I said, "Hey, thank you." And that was the interaction.
What? That's great.
And then every year I see him, he comes by, we chat just a little bit, quick interaction, leaves me something, says thanks, walks away. This year he left me he brought me a marijuana brownie, and then the next day he brought me a little can of this booze to try. But he's a really good dude. I can't believe I can't remember his name now. Every year he stops by and says hi, but it's just like, there's no pressure. Doesn't take a lot of time. He doesn't want a lot of my time. And, he's just a good dude. And I appreciate it.
Hey, Pat likes brownies too. Intermittent fasting. My fucking stomach. God, I'm hungry as hell. Thanksgiving
brownies,
2 days.
Patrick.
What's that?
Weed brownies.
Patrick. I try a weed brownie.
Okay.
What was that for? Okay. Well, yeah, I would try it. A little one.
Just don't do it at a convention.
Oh no, I'm not gonna partake at a convention. Who would do that anyway?
Me, every convention. That's how I get through my day.
Just don't give stuff to people that try to tattle on you. That's all. Fucking narcs you have to watch out for. We know who they are. Next. Oh, I had another one. That's right. What was the other one I was gonna say? Oh, there's the guy, probably mid-20s, would always either see me at Too Many Games or Retro World Expo, would take a picture of me. Then next year, take a picture of me holding the picture of us from the year before. And he's done it about 5 times. So it's pictureception of us. You know what I mean? Like holding a picture each year.
Oh, yeah. I know. I remember you telling me about that.
And I saw him again last year or previous this year at Too Many Games. So I'd say between 2016, a couple of COVID years in there to now, there's been 4 or 5 pictures of the inception. We're always doing the same pose every year in the picture. That guy's pretty cool.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This question is mostly for Ian. Just wanted to see if he's been keeping up with the pocket, the analog pocket core updates that have been happening about every other day. There's a new core coming out, Super Nintendo, Nintendo, arcade cores, all a bunch of handhelds. Now today, the PC Engine core was released. So I just wanted to see if he's been keeping up with that. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
Wow. What do you think? General handheld? You got to look into this stuff.
General handheld for I'm sorry, I spaced on that.
Oh, he wants to check out the cores for the FPGA.
Yeah. I want to check out the cores. I really want to check out some of the older computer cores and see what they've got. Oh. Like like C64 and stuff if they have that going. like you can just play with like one or two buttons.
IBM XT on my pocket.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey guys, love the show. Have you ever played the Florida Man game? If not, go to www.google.com. Then type in Google. Then click on the link to
Google. Wait. Type in Google after you're at Google? I don't think you need that, but okay.
Google. And then once you're there, what you want to do is type in Florida Man and your birthday, and then read the first news story that you've seen.
So I looked this up before. I had the links here to mine for May 9th. There's two. One was reported on May 9th. I don't think it happened on May 9th. Florida man cited after authorities found an illegally poached gator foot stuck in his dashboard. And there's a picture of a gator foot sticking out of his dashboard.
Wow.
I don't know if like a gator tried to like get into the front of the car through the engine block and try to escape through the front, or if he cut off and got, it's insane. The picture's there. You see that picture? So that's the first one. The second one, oh, service unavailable? Oh, no. There's also floridamanbirthdays.com. At least it used to exist.
Floridamanbirthday.org is where I'm at, which makes it easy. For my birthday, a Florida man drove his golf cart to Walmart and tried to run over people in the store, even though he didn't know why.
He tried to run over people at the Walmart?
Yep, in his cart.
Oh, so my link's no longer there. Damn it. There was something good for this. So the second one, now it's gone off the site. Where'd you go to? You went to .org?
floridamanbirthday.org.
Okay, the .com one is down for my birthday. I knew there was a good one. Now I'm going to find it. May 9th. Search. Oh, there's a... Okay, it's just the alligator hand one. Okay, I got to find... Next week, I'm going to find the other one. The other one was even better on that. Next one.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Thomas from Fresno, California. Hey, I wanted to know, what is your favorite Super Nintendo game after doing the book? You know, like one that you didn't expect to be good.
One I did not expect to be good. I did about 80 reviews for the Super Nintendo book, and unfortunately, I can't recall any of them right now. They all blur together, unfortunately, when you do like a high volume of reviews like that. Should I just look in the guidebook?
Look in the guidebook.
There's all plush on it. Let me get back to you next week. Now I feel bad. I don't have one that like I didn't think was going to be good in my head that turned out to be good. I'm sure there's a couple, but I honestly can't think of any right now. I was trying to think of was the Bugs Bunny NBA Jam game better than I thought? I can't remember if that one was better than I thought when I played that one. You know what I'm talking about?
Space Jam.
No, not, no.
Oh, no.
Wasn't Space Jam. It was just a generic Looney Tunes game.
Yeah, I can't remember.
But I can't remember. That might have been better than I thought, but it also was not a great game. It might have been average or above average on that one. Why wasn't there a Space Jam game? That's a good question. Because probably because of Jordan. That's probably that would have been difficult to work around that. I'll do a few more here. Actually, I'm gonna play one out of order right now. I'm gonna play. We have someone that's checking in from another part of the world. Let's...
Pat, how are you? This is Charlie from Bavaria calling. I heard you had a problem opening the packs of the pieces of the Reese's. I think that intermittent fasting is turning you into a little marshmallow with hair. Yeah, we are all laughing at you over here in Bavaria. It's very funny. But we talked about it, and we thought maybe that when you have people come over to work on the house, you know, plumbers, roofers, interior decorators, real men, you could ask them to open all the candy for you. Or maybe when they come by the house to sell you the Girl Scout cookies, maybe they could open the candy too. Or if it's late at night, no one is there, perhaps you could use dynamite to open the candy. Let me know how it goes. I'm going to hang up now. I don't want your puny arm to fall off from holding the phone too long. Hasta la vista.
Hey, come on, Charlie from Bavaria. That's uncalled for. That's uncalled for. We got another one from Europe, which is timely.
Hi, Pat and Ian. I'm Zad from England. Do either of you follow soccer, or football as we call it here? If so, what are America's chances at the World Cup, which starts next week, do you think? I'm asking since they are in the same group as England.
Well, I think we're like, gun to my head, 65% chance to get out of the group along with England. Obviously, England's going to move on. And it's either going to be Wales or the U.S. And that tie to Wales really hurt.
Hurts.
Like yes. If it was a win, it'd be like a 90% chance, 95% chance they move on. But the fact that they only tied, that's going to make it dicier these next two games. But there was a statistic that said whenever the U.S. won or tied their first game in their group, they always moved on to the elimination round. So, knock on wood. It's going to be a good game after Thanksgiving. All right, back to the regular set of questions. Do a couple more.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to let you know that I listen to you in the shower every day. So, thanks for spending your morning with me as I get ready for work.
Okay, that's TMI, but thanks, Jeremy.
My question is, given the totality of their 8-bit and 16-bit libraries, who is your favorite third-party developer? I've always been partial to SNK, but obviously there are a lot of good options out there. Thanks. Bye.
We get this question every so often. I think I always go back to Konami, at least for NES, just for the variety of different games, because you have like the action type of games. You got, you know, you have your Castlevania, you have your action platforms, you have like Russian Attack, but then you have your Top Gun looking at the games, and you have like, you know, shooters like Life Force and Gradius, and you have Track and Field and Track and Field 2. It's like they're the queen of the NES. They can do every genre, it seems, very effectively. That's always my pick, at least for the NES.
Was that question for the NES? Or well, it was 8 and 16, right? Tough. My heart wants to say Namco, but I think my brain says Capcom.
Namco for 8-bit or 16-bit?
Eight. I really like the stuff they did for like the releases on the PC Engine were great. They're like arcade game ports, but like because I really like Namco. I love Namco in terms of third party games in general. I love their releases. I love their company. But if it's purely for 8 and 16-bit support and what they did, I would probably say Capcom.
Sure. 16-bit. Thinking about Super Nintendo. I mean, Konami was obviously super strong on there as well. So I mean, like. The more I think about
it. Konami was great during that era. It's tough to pick.
Yeah.
Indian. Why do you not like Tommy Tallarico? He's an amazing man. Please be nice. You can make up and be friends. Maybe even have him on the podcast.
Ian, did the guy that approached you at Portland get a voice changer? What happened there? What in the hell was that?
That was terrifying. That was terrifying. I don't feel safe. I would like someone to hold my hand.
You want someone to hold your hand? You want to do one more?
Yeah, let's do one more. My voice is petering out here.
Okay.
Hey boys, Mark from Texas over here. Just want to let you guys know about a fun new company called Retro_Drive_Gaming on Instagram, selling a plug-and-play console full of thousands of ROMs of 64, Super Nintendo, NES. I think you got some Genesis on there. You got all the greats. Totally legal. It's all in the up and up. It's ready to go, ready to ship out. I think they got some deals on their page. They're posting ads on Instagram. One just popped up on my Instagram over there. Great stuff. Great stuff, guys. Definitely not something that should be reported or, you know, nothing that Nintendo's going to sue for, nothing like that. Totally on the up and up, ready to go.
Kind of snarky there.
Yeah,
that one, Mark. So I just looked them up. I'm logging in to Instagram right now. They're selling, God, I think we were given one of these 1 year for the marathon from a sponsor, one of these, let's see, it's Retro_Drive_Gaming on Instagram, and yeah, they sell the Retro Drive with a controller, over 15,000 retro games on one system, PlayStation, Sony. Wait, PlayStation, comma Sony? PlayStation, comma Sony? Did Sony even have another console I'm not aware of besides a PlayStation? PlayStation, Sony, Nintendo, all the other stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I don't. Instagram uses a marketplace. Seems to be like there's not a lot of people that are aware of this stuff. Well, some people don't care. If you're on Instagram, you know, if you're casually, I can get a retro drive for, you know, whatever. These things probably cost like $50 only, $60 bucks, I'm guessing. But it's not even. It's just like one of the generic ones with four USBs in the side. It's not even with the case. You see that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just whatever. It is what it is. It's hard. It's hard to do away with this, and it's hard to police it. But, you know, what are you going to do, right?
I laugh at Under Atari 2600 full library. Bitch, we have no idea what the fuck the full library of the Atari 2600
is. Oh, is that there? Where's that under? I didn't see that.
It was on the actual webpage for it. I just Googled it.
This is kind of scummy. $40 back for video reviews. That's scummy.
Ew, that is scummy.
So they want people, I guess, to go on Instagram and post their quote reviews in order to get it. $40 off. How much are they actually charging for this? It's retrodrive.store. This might be a backdoor scumbag seller of the week here. I want to see what they're charging for this shit now. If they can get back $40.
Deluxe retro drive with four controllers from $239.
What the fuck?
Standard retro drive, $180 for the standard retro drive.
$180 with one controller, and then $240 with four controllers.
Retro drive deluxe, $219.95.
So you get marked down from $192. So you get it looks like a kind of like an 8-bit DOS style controller. Yeah. It looks like, I can't see the company on it. Oh, it is. It's an SN30. Okay, so you get an SN30. Which I'm guessing they don't have a wholesale deal with them. Those go for what, about $30, something like that?
Yeah, I think so.
Let me see. Because I want to see what this actual cost is there. The SN30 is $30. That style is $30 or $25. We'll say it's $25. So they're charging $100 for this Raspberry Pi. $150. Holy shit. With the case, and you get a 16 gig micro card, which doesn't cost really anything. That's nuts to me.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Okay, then Retro Drive, you're the anchor voicemail scumbag seller
of the week. Way to go!
Oh, this was a fun podcast again.
It was a good one. We had a time.
Hey, we're actually done a little bit earlier than usual somehow.
Not so bad.
I'm not sure how that happens. I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
Well, hope you have a good Thanksgiving, Ian.
You too.
We'll be
back next week.
What's that?
I said you too. We'll be back next week. I'll talk about any food that I might make as long as I'm not dying. Gonna roast some pork belly. I'm gonna make a tri-tip.
This year I might actually be going to a Thanksgiving. Remember last year I did my own Thanksgiving. I went to the local place and just bought like half a turkey. And I bought sides. I made my own gravy. It wasn't bad.
Where are you going?
I'm probably going to go with a friend's friend that I'm friendly with. I'll just say that.
A friend's friend that you're friendly with. Okay.
I'll tell you off air. That's a little private.
A little private.
But I'm going to get fat and happy. And then I might be working on NES Punk video through the end of November, which is only 8 days away. Jesus Christ. Why don't I give myself 4 days to do these videos? Well, it's going to be an easier one to edit, so I'll probably edit it and get it out on Wednesday the 30th. We'll just say that. And then I'll probably do a Christmas one. All right. Thanks a lot. We'll see you later.
Bye.